This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to talk with Zev Neuwirth. Zev, Dr. Neuwirth, is the Chief of Clinical Transformation at Atrium Health. He's also the author of a book, Reframing Healthcare. He also has a magnificent podcast around the same concept of reframing healthcare. In fact, just released an episode today around election 2020. And we're talking at the start of November, right after this presidential election. And so thrilled to hear his thoughts on that. Zev, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Scott, I'm a big fan of your podcast and your work. So thank you for having me on. I've been at Atrium Health for almost 9 years. Atrium is a multi-hospital, multi-state, integrated healthcare delivery system, and growing, as I'm sure everyone is aware at the moment. I've been very, very fortunate to have had some clinical operational experience in our medical group and worked in population health and now work in care transformation. And it's really a wonderful organization, and just really, really proud to be part of it.
Thank you very much. And you've done a remarkable job. Talk for a moment. I know you released an episode today on election 2020. Any sense of how the election will impact healthcare? Any thoughts on this?
Obviously, at this moment in time, and when I released the podcast, which happened about 4 o'clock this morning, so it's been a long day for me. Obviously we don't, the election is too close to call. We don't have the results in. So the podcast was actually me being in a scene where I'm in the Oval Office with whomever is the vice president and president on January 21st. And they've just been inaugurated, and I've been asked the question of what do we need to focus on? What healthcare policies do we need over the next 4 years? And so I spend about half an hour really outlining a proposal for the president on what we need to focus on. And so I wasn't really getting into the politics there, but I think to answer your question here, I think there's a lot of commonalities between the two administrations and a lot of differences. The commonalities, no matter who is elected and who's in office, I think we're going to see a major shift to value-based care. I think CMS is going to continue to push us. Medicare is going to continue to push us with Medicare Advantage. And by the way, that is folks are worried about socialized medicine and all that sort of stuff. There's nothing socialized about this. Capitated Medicare Advantage is a highly competitive, game. All the insurance companies are in it. And so it is a free enterprise game. It's just a value-based game. And the same is true for the bundled payment care initiatives. CMS has already declared they're going to really expand that by 2022. So we don't have a lot of time to get ready for that. But that's a matter if we have a Republican, Democrat, or Democrat president, we're going to see that shift to value-based care, which I think is really important. And I think it's really encouraging. I think you're going to see, no matter who is in the White House, I think you're going to see a reining in on the rising cost of medications. At this point in time in Medicare, I saw some data recently that showed that the cost of medications is actually about the same as the cost of hospitalizations, which is unprecedented. It is the most rapidly rising segment of costs in healthcare, and it's unsustainable. And it doesn't matter who's in office, they're going to focus on medications. I think similarly, you're going to see a focus on pricing transparency, no matter who's in office. And I think, the other commonality is no matter who's in office, you're going to see CMS putting out regs that pay for virtual care and for remote patient monitoring and hospital at home. These are the right things to do. We have to do them. And we need the regulations and we need the payment structure in place to make it possible for hospital systems and healthcare systems and provider groups to move into that, and it is also part of, I think, of a larger value-based picture as well. The differences, there are some differences, and if you want, I can mention a couple of them, but those are some of the commonalities.
Please. No, a couple of the core differences would be great to understand what you're thinking.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, I think it's obvious to everyone the approach to the pandemic is going to be vastly different. I don't want to get political here, but I think that the current administration has thrown their hands up in the air I see a lot of, you know, public health and medical expertise that is not really being listened to or adhered to. And I think there's some concern, quite honestly, that the science community and the medical community have about that. And I think it's some real concern there and a valid concern. I think if there's a Democrat in the office, if Biden wins, I think you're going to see a much more public health, scientific, epidemiologic based approach to containing the pandemic. And by the way, you know, as we look across the globe, you know, you look at Australia, and they've essentially been taking that kind of approach, a public health approach, and they're doing a lot better. They're containing it. The countries that are not, and they're taking a political approach, you know, and again, I understand the complexities of closing down businesses. I understand the impact on business. But I think what we're seeing is, you know, the pandemic just, again, coming back in a second wave, which is horrific. I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, again, we're talking about yesterday, 2 days in a row, the largest number of people who were infected, over 115,000 Americans. Yesterday, the day before that, it was 110,000. So we see what happens when we don't listen to our experts in epidemiology and public health. And I think, you know, to get back to business and get back to life as normal, we're just going to have to do, you know, take the medicine and do what we have to do. And I think that'll get us back to where we were before. So I think those were, you know, a couple of differences. And I will say one thing, which is very, very important, and I think really critically important to me and to us as a nation, as a country, and the type of society we want to be. The people that are most impacted by the pandemic are people of color. Black Americans die 2 to 4 times the rate white Americans do when it comes to pandemics. So when you ignore the pandemic, when you ignore the suffering and pain, the hospitalizations, the infection rate, the death rate, you essentially are ignoring the disproportionate negative impact it has on people of color. And I just don't think that is the right thing to do. And so if for no other reason, that would be a good enough reason to really take a public health approach and to do the things that the epidemiologists and scientists and medical leaders are telling us to do. And that is a fundamental difference. The last difference, I would say, of course, is the ACA. The ACA is going to be, you know, with the individual mandate, with, you know, this concern about exclusion of a medical condition, excluding people who have prior medical conditions. If you have a Democrat in the office, they are going to fight for the ACA. If you have a Republican in the office, I think you're going to see the ACA challenged. And I have some concerns for, again, Americans who have chronic conditions, which makes up about a third of America, by the way. So those are some of the differences.
And one of the issues that you point on the ACA is, regardless of political party, it's something the polls show 80-90% are very much in favor of this concept of you can get insurance if you have a pre-existing condition. I mean, there's no way around that. All Americans really want that ability to get insurance. Yeah. What about following up on some of those issues? What about Medicare for all, public options, expanded coverage, moving the Medicare age from 65 to 63 or 62? What's your sense of, are those things very hard to move forward with a 50-50 Senate, even if the Democrats win both seats in Georgia and end up with a 51-50 Senate? What's your sense of the temperature on some of these things and what'll transpire? And will these be a big part of the first 2 years in the Biden administration? I'm assuming at this point Biden wins, the House is held by the Democrats, the Senate is 50-50, maybe the Republicans won one of these Georgia seats and have a slight majority, but either way, it's a very close Senate. What's your sense of big healthcare initiatives like the Obamacare that you saw? Will there be a big healthcare initiative, or is the next year going to be consumed with COVID and so forth? And will the Democrats want to rock the boat and go hardcore on some of the tax issues and some of the healthcare issues, or will they want to? They're sort of in a tough spot because they've got a centrist part of the party, a progressive part of the party. Progressive Party would like them to go full steam ahead, but the Senate is going to be very close at best. What's your sense of how some of these things play out?
Yeah, I think you're right about, you know, COVID obviously has to be a major priority, but you know, tied in with that is just the you know, the cost of healthcare and containing those costs as well. I have this, as you point out, this podcast, and I get the opportunity to talk to experts from, you know, various fields in healthcare and people who are leading and policy experts. And I don't think we're heading towards Medicare for all. I think, given some of the reaction that the country has had to that, I think that, you know, following some other countries that, you know, are still maintaining a highly competitive environment, I think you could have value-based care and still have free enterprise. I think you can, you know, but you're changing the game, but it's still a game. And it's still, in some sense, a capitalist game and a free enterprise game. So I think that, you know, the for instance, again, MA, Medicare Advantage is just a great example of that. It is such a great example of how a sort of a capitated model works. You get much better outcomes if you Medicare Advantage over Medicare fee for service. Patients get much more benefits, whether it be transportation services or food services or home care services. So you're getting better care experience, more consumer oriented care. And overall, we know again, that Medicare Advantage lowers the total cost of care. So it is a more cost-effective care, and it's a better care, it's a more connected care. And that's just so, and you can have that actually set up as a free enterprise. So let people compete, whoever has the better product. And so I think you're going to see that be the avenue. Now, I do believe that, you know, we need to have universal coverage. Every American should have insurance, and every American should have basic care. And I think that primary care must move, similarly to MA, must move to some sort of basic model where everyone is able to access primary care. I would still think that there's some way to make that a competitive environment as well. And by the way, you know, you could offer, you know, this is like in every other industry. I mean, you know, just because you have a basic option, you know, public option, and I don't think we have the time to get into some of the complexities of that and some of the concerns that the insurance company has over a public option. But and the concern they have is that it will undercut the market, right? And so, but I think you could still, not everyone will want just that basic option. A lot of people will want a higher quality option. And that's, you know, that's where, you know, insurance companies come in, and they offer these other options. So I think you're going to see potentially a public option for some basic primary care, but I do not believe in this country that we are going to be able to, or should even move to a Medicare for all model.
Thank you. And a public option is sort of like the post office, because you have to use the post office versus UPS or FedEx. It just gives you an option, and in some ways it keeps the insurance companies, it gives them something they've got to compete against, economically at least. So, fascinating issue,
exactly.
And obviously it's a lot of complications to it, but a couple states are mandating a public option by 2021, and we'll see how that works out.
Yes.
Another question. You had mentioned, and I don't mean to keep you too long, Zev, but I'd love your thoughts. You had mentioned your podcast in the Oval Office, you know, and part of it was, what would you like to see happen? What do you think should happen? And why don't you, you've talked a little bit about the similarities and the differences, you know, lots of pressure either way on drug costs, hospital costs, and so forth. But what would, and obviously on the Democratic side, probably more efforts to shore up the ACA, on the Republican side, not as much so. But tell us for a moment, what would you think should be done policy-wise?
Well, again, I think the first thing is that we must not move away from universal coverage. We must move towards it. At this point in the country, there are over 30 million Americans who are uninsured. It's literally 10% of the population. If the ACA gets challenged, we could see that number increase dramatically. And again, I don't know how we as a country can hold our heads up high. And yet not allow and not afford every citizen basic health insurance. So that would be the first thing. And I think part of that is, again, as we were just talking about, it's not just the insurance coverage, it's also access to basic care.
Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. Let's talk about that for a second, because I know people do this in a bifurcated way, and it might have to be to make this understandable to people and so forth. Mm-hmm. But as you and I both know, coverage without access is almost meaningless. And what I mean by that, 330 million people, we've got this huge political debate over coverage, and I get that. It's political hot potato. It's where the focus is. But you and I both know to actually have access, we need either a lot more clinicians, a lot better technology, mm-hmm. a lot more providers, specialists, primary care physicians, because even with coverage, even if we expanded Medicaid to cover everybody in the country, what you mentioned on the ACA is a huge percentage of the people that are on the expanded ACA are there through expanded Medicaid. And you're right, the number could go from 30 to 50 million overnight if Medicaid was no longer expanded. But states probably have to keep it expanded, but it would just cause a bigger hole in state budgets. But coverage is one issue. Access, I think in the long run, is as big or a bigger issue, because without access and enough physicians and providers, when do we get to actually talk about and solve that issue?
Yeah, and I should have had you on my podcast, because I that's exactly what I go into in this point, is to say that I completely agree with you. Health insurance is not the same thing as care and healthcare. They're two different things, and you can have the insurance and still not get the care. And I mean, great, you have insurance for traumas and catastrophic things like that, but most of the care really we need right now is preventive and proactive. I mean, the rate of chronic disease in our country is just crazy, and you need to have that preventive primary care. And so I think you're spot on. I am not aware of any, at the federal level, any initiative that is right now looking seriously at the issue of primary care capacity. I mean, as a country, it just seems to me, you would look at your supply chain, and you would say, it's just like in any other industry. And we actually ran into that problem in the pandemic. We were just, caught by surprise. Our supply chain with the supplies that we needed, whether they be masks or ventilators, we really were caught, with our pants down. And I think that the same thing's going to happen with primary care. In fact, I shared a story in the podcast about my own father, who had a life-threatening illness, went into the hospital, came out of the hospital. Thank God he came out, and it took 5 weeks to get his an appointment with his primary care doctor. And we set it up before he left the hospital, but it took 5 weeks. Well, in that time, in that 5 weeks, he got sick again because no one was looking at the overall picture. He actually saw two or three specialists, by the way. He went to see a cardiologist and a kidney doctor and I think one other specialist. So he got to see specialists, but no one was looking at the whole picture. And in that 5 weeks that he couldn't see a primary care doctor, he ended up in the hospital again and almost died again. And by the grace of God, he survived and he's out again. And sure, we got him to the primary care doctor right away. But this story is not a unique story. And it is a story of life and death, and it affects the young people and old people.
Yes, we've just got a couple minutes left, but I want to put a highlight in the story is at the end of the day, it's not sexy to talk about and not political to talk about adding more medical schools, adding more residency spots, but at the primary care and the specialty level and all kinds of advanced practitioners, the medical schools are getting at it to an extent, but we need so many more of them to really make this work in the long run at every level, advanced practitioners, primary care physicians, specialty physicians, as we have this aging country, 330 million people plus. It just is. This access issue is going to be a disaster. And you talk about it in the supply chain way, and I love that. We've only just got a couple minutes left, Steph. I'd like to give you a couple moments to talk about your podcast and your book, and to tell the audience a little bit about those and where they could follow those, where they can get your book, where they could learn more about Zev Neuwirth, who's just really a magnificent doctor, person, leader, communicator. Zev.
Well, thank you, Scott. That's very kind of you. Thank you. I did write a book a year and a half ago. It was published, called Reframing Healthcare, A Roadmap for Creating Disruptive Change. And the reason I wrote the book, and it took me quite a few years of research and hundreds of interviews with healthcare entrepreneurs, is that we have been trying to really improve healthcare for decades. I've been part of that movement. And every couple of years, there's a new movement that comes along that says, hey, we got the answer. And it comes and it goes, and we're stuck, and we're usually worse off than we were before. And the truth is, despite the fact that we're spending one-fifth of the gross domestic product on healthcare, our healthcare is worse now today than it was in the past. And so the answer is not to try to do the same things over and over again, or even to try to do them better. The era of reengineering is over. We are, every other industry has left that era. They are in an era of reframing, whether it's banking or telecom or entertainment or manufacturing, they are all transforming. They are all moving into a different age. And so what I did is study what they are doing. I studied what the entrepreneurs and founders of new companies, successful companies in healthcare, the folks that are actually changing healthcare, those are the folks I talked to, and I studied them and I spoke to them in depth. And what happened was I found a pattern, and I wrote that pattern down and wrote a book about that pattern, because that is the way we're going to get out of the dilemma we're in. You know, as Einstein said, you can't solve the problem with the same thinking that caused them, and yet it caused it. And yet that is exactly what we continue to do. It is not about execution. It's about transformation. And again, it's not about reengineering. It's about reframing. And so in the book, I give many, many examples of this. And by the way, it's happening. So it's not a hypothesis. It's an observation. I just discerned it. I distilled it, and I'm sharing it. And more people need to read the book, because they keep on hitting their heads against the wall. And it's not just that the industry is going to fall behind, and that's part of it, because I think that can very much happen as new entrants come in. And we're seeing that with the Walgreens and the CVS. They're, by the way, they're reframing healthcare. And I talk about that in the book. But I think more importantly, the reason why this is so important is because, you know, people are dying and people are suffering needlessly within our healthcare system. I mean, every day, somewhere between 500 to 1,000 people die needlessly. And that is the core reason. And it's and thousands, or not tens of thousands, of people go through a system that, quite honestly, is not patient-centered, not consumer-oriented, and isn't humane. I mean, our experience in healthcare, and everyone can relate to this, is nothing like our experience with any other industry. We are so far behind from a consumer perspective, from an ethical perspective, from a humane perspective. And that was fundamentally the reason I devoted so much time and so many years to actually understanding how to reframe healthcare and then sharing it in this book.
Well, Dr. North, you've done a magnificent job with it. I want to encourage people to read Zev's book and listen to his podcast on reframing healthcare. Just brilliant and magnificent guest you got. And thank you for joining us today.
Scott, thank you so much. Always a pleasure speaking with you.